Welcome to In Depth. I'm your host, Jill Webb. Do you remember the first book you were obsessed with? Maybe you have fond memories of trips to the bookstore or spending Saturday mornings browsing tables of books on the sidewalk. Teachers say books are some of the most important resources for children. Reading obviously impacts how well a child does in school, but researchers say it also helps their psychological well-being. But in many low-income communities, these resources don't exist because it's hard to find a bookstore. These areas are called book deserts, areas where families struggle to find age-appropriate reading material. In fact, the Bronx, home to 1.4 million people, is a book desert because as of now, there are only 2 bookstores in the entire borough. Saricia Fennell was born and raised in New York City.
For the longest time, I didn't even know that bookstores existed.
Not until high school.
I ended up in foster care at the age of 8, and I moved from Brooklyn into the Bronx. Being away from my family, teachers were trying to find ways to comfort us, and so I got really big into reading.
Saricia loved reading, but didn't have a bookstore in her neighborhood. She went to libraries, but they didn't always have what she needed. For example, there was this one time when her English teacher encouraged the class to buy books to prepare for the SATs.
I asked my teacher, like, hey, where can I go to get these? You know, can I check them out at the library? And she's like, yeah, you can check them out, but it's probably better if you buy them so you can do the practice checks, et cetera, et cetera.
She had to go to a totally different neighborhood to find a bookstore.
And I was like, wow, this is amazing.
According to the American Federation of Teachers, 45% of U.S. children live in areas without nearby libraries or bookstores, or they live in homes where books are unaffordable. The Mayor's Office of Media and Entertainment counts the Bronx as having 9 bookstores, but only 2 of them are full-time bookstores. The other 7 are stores selling religious books, comics, and university textbooks. These numbers are stark when compared to neighboring boroughs. The Mayor's Office of Media and Entertainment says Manhattan has 73 bookstores. Researchers say this disparity is visible when you look at literacy rates. In September, the city released the results of the yearly English Language Arts Tests, or ELAs. About 50% of 3rd through 8th graders passed citywide, but in the Bronx, just 33% of them passed. Book deserts are often found in Black and Latino neighborhoods. It's something Bronx filmmaker Gregory Hernandez realized.
We're the most diverse area, arguably, in the country. Definitely the city in the Bronx. It's the poorest, if not the poorest congressional district in the country. And there's a lot of stereotypes that people do not purchase literature, that do not read.
He believes this stereotype is a mixture of racism and classism.
What do we think about when we think about the Bronx? We think about the good, the Yankee Stadium, the Bronx Zoo, Botanical Garden, Wave Hill. But when we think about the bad, we think about buildings on fire and crime and poverty, and there's no place to shop for good food, yet that's not true.
Gregory is invested in changing that narrative. That's why he wrote and produced a documentary about the Bronx's literacy crisis. It's called 1.5 Million. The doc explores what led to the borough's low literacy levels and how community members are working to change it.
The inspiration came in 2014 when I was scouting locations for a narrative short film, and one of the scenes was going to take place in a bookstore. I'm from the Bronx, and that was the first time I realized, oh wow, there are no bookstores around me.
During the taping, he realized how many people in his community use the library.
It feels like a lot of people are still living as if they're in the early 1990s. They have to go to the library to do everything, to print, to use, you know, to edit their resume, to take out books. They don't have books at home. They don't have the money to buy books.
Hardcover books can cost anywhere from $13 to $28, usually leaning towards the higher end. Professor Susan Newman, an early literacy expert at NYU, says those prices affect literacy rates.
One of the things we know is that if a child is not able to read by the end of third grade or read proficiently, they're likely to have great difficulty throughout the rest of their schooling because the content only gets harder.
Professor Newman says this also affects how students interpret material via textbooks or worksheets in math, science, history, and other subjects.
It's a good benchmark for us to know that we really have to do that hard work in the early years in order for these children to be able to succeed as they go through the grades.
Few kids in the Bronx are meeting that benchmark.
The last time I looked, they were scoring at 18% proficiency level, when we expect or we hope that children will at least have basic literacy, you know, 40-50%. So these children are seriously behind.
Unite for Literacy is a non-traditional book publishing company that provides low-cost books. It also provides a book desert map. Its data shows that only 8% of homes in Bronx County have over 100 books. That's some of the lowest stats across the U.S. For some, their parents just aren't able to help them.
Many of their parents, they're loving, they're kind and wonderful, but in fact, they often have difficulty in their primary language as well as their secondary language, which is often English. So these children are not getting the kind of instruction in those early years when they are learning to decode.
And when it comes to adults, their struggles with reading are frequently disregarded.
We rarely hear about it. Yet we have a literacy problem in the United States with as many as 30% of our adult population is not proficient in reading. Take that and take a second language and it only exacerbates it.
You may be thinking, what does this have to do with a bookstore? Why can't they go to a library? Well, remember how Ceresia couldn't get everything she needed from the library? It's that. Plus,
not having books in the immediate surrounding is that you don't know you need them. So if you don't have them, it's not like you grow up saying, oh gosh, I want a book.
She says this leads to kids growing up without actually seeing words.
You learn to focus on pictures. You learn to focus on mobile devices. You learn other strategies in order to make your day-to-day. And after a while, this is not a very useful strategy.
Ceresia's love for reading remained through college, where she majored in English, and as she began her career as a book publicist. She was booking literature events across the entire country.
People would come into New York City. They would go, you know, do events in Manhattan, do events in Brooklyn, and some select events in Queens, but never in the Bronx. And I always wondered, why does the Bronx keep being skipped over? Why, you know, why aren't we able to book any authors at that Barnes & Noble that was located in the Bronx at the time?
She started asking authors about the Bronx.
And a lot of them would say, oh, I would love to come to the Bronx. I would be happy to. You know, it just so happens that whenever I'm in New York, I end up in Manhattan or Brooklyn.
Her frustration grew. So she began surveying people in the Bronx about where they went to see authors.
A lot of people said, like, they go into Manhattan or they'll travel into Brooklyn. So we're all going, you know, away, traveling 30 to 45 minutes, sometimes an hour and a half on the train to go and see someone.
Her dream was always to open a bookstore and hold a book festival to encourage reading. But when the Bronx's Barnes & Noble closed in 2017, she realized that was the moment.
With that store closing, I said, no, I cannot wait. I cannot wait. Like, this is something that needs to happen now. And I said, I don't want to quit my job and open the bookstore, but I do think that I can get this book festival going. I went to Twitter and tweeted and said, hey, I want to start a book festival in the Bronx. Are there any volunteers who want to help me put this thing on?
200 people responded. She had the manpower, but not the money. She reached out to sponsors, but everyone said no. So she turned to crowdfunding.
We were able to raise enough money to cover having books there and the tent and chairs and a stage rental and, you know, working with Bronx businesses to make sure that they were the ones supplying those kinds of things.
On May 19th, 2018, the first ever Bronx Book Festival officially kicked off.
It was raining. It was very windy. We were trying to put up these little like tarps to block the wind so people could sit in the tent.
That didn't stop Bronx families from helping her put on the event.
I remember people who were coming, rolling up their sleeves to help the volunteers, to help myself get it done. And I just started crying. I was like, this is what a community coming together for, not just, you know, literature, but banding together to make sure the event goes off without a hitch.
There's something special about the Bronx. It's something Gregory noticed when making his documentary. And in the moment, Cerecia saw it too, a side of the Bronx that isn't often publicized. The community's desire to pull each other up.
So many people count out the people of the Bronx. You know, they're like, oh, they don't read up there. They don't care about this stuff. And it's like, no, we do. Just give us the opportunity and we'll be there. We'll be present.
More than 700 people attended year one. The one question she heard all day.
When's the next event? You know, are you going to do this weekly? Can you do this monthly?
This overwhelming demand confirmed it was time to step things up. This time, Cerecia got some assistance.
Fordham University reached out to me and said, you know, we really want to partner with you. We want to go really big for 2019. And I said, if you really want to go big, let's have access to your campus.
It was a star-studded lineup of speakers from the area, including U.S. Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor.
It was a packed lawn full of readers, families.
And then something happened that reminded her just how important this event is.
There was an older gentleman and he was there with his daughter who had to be like maybe in high school. But he said to me, you know, we live in this area and never stepped foot on, you know, Fordham University's campus. But now she has the opportunity to possibly feel like one day she can attend school here. And that just for me was eye-opening because I didn't realize how much representation like this mattered. You know, we talk about it a lot, like if you see it, you can, you know, achieve it, et cetera, et cetera. But it was happening and right in front of my eyes. I'm like, oh wow, like by my partnership with Fordham University, it's like inspiring all of these people who are walking the campus to feel like one day they can apply and maybe attend school here.
Cerecia is invested in developing the Bronx's literacy resources. Professor Newman says there's a lot to be done.
We need tons of stuff in the Bronx, frankly. We need, of course, more bookstores.
They also need magazines and newspapers placed in the community. While many lean towards digital publishing, physical copies are still vital.
It's about putting print everywhere, in nail salons, in laundromats. You may have heard about our work and putting little bookcases in laundromats. So we're trying to say that it's a community experience, that literacy occurs when children see print everywhere in their environment. And I think that's the only way we're really going to begin to solve the problem.
This type of community access is something Cerecia thinks of when planning the festival.
I think the power of hosting the festival outdoors has been, it's a book party. You know, the event is free, so like anyone can come over and listen to the panels. And it's like a direct pitch of here's why we love books.
Another critical part was showing attendees what their future could be.
I try to do in particular is highlight as many Bronx writers as I can, because I think it's important for the people to know, just in general, like you live in the Bronx, you should know the writers that come from the Bronx, went to school in the Bronx, et cetera, et cetera.
The programming is designed to reflect what the population of the Bronx looks like.
So having panelists from different age ranges, different socioeconomic backgrounds, folks from the LGBTQ+IA community, and, you know, making sure race and culturally people are represented. And so I like to say that the festival reflects what the world looks like.
That means including multiple languages. According to census data, about 58% of Bronx residents are bilingual. The majority are Spanish speaking. Cerecia knows this can help close that income gap between the Bronx and other boroughs.
It's not only about reading for leisure, but reading to lead a better life. You know, the Bronx has other stipulations as well. Highest borough with obesity and asthma and et cetera, et cetera. And so, you know, really making sure that people understand what they're reading on the back of a food packaging label. You know, these things will help them.
Literacy affects everything, unfortunately. Your ability to know what medicine you take, the ability to be able to drive if you choose to drive, to know how to calculate basic information from the grocery store. It affects everything.
Misinformation thrives in low literacy settings.
They'll get information from other people, which is like playing telephone, if you remember, where you get slight misinformation, and it really affects everything you do in terms of being able to just do daily errands.
Which is why it's important to not only tackle children's literacy rates, but also adults.
It is so easy and integral to be invested in literacy for not only our children, but for adults, because it helps you with your health-wise. You're going to live longer. Apparently, there's a lot of research that shows that two people at the age of 65, one who is reading maybe at like an 8th grade or a 10th grade level versus somebody who's reading, you know, closer to what, you know, they should be reading, they can live like a year and a half longer.
While libraries don't have everything, they do help.
I continue to partner with the New York Public Library so that they can sign people up for library cards on the spot.
Ceresia estimates that half of the festival's attendees that first year signed up for a library card. By the second year, the library got 800 signups. This made Ceresia think about what other community resources would have benefited her as a child.
I would have loved meeting an author and having them come visit the school. And then I also thought, young Ceresia didn't have money, you know, to buy books at that age. Like I said, I relied heavily on the library. And so I said, you know what, wouldn't it be awesome if the Bronx's Reading could sort of partner with schools, have them apply to have authors come and visit, and we would cover up to anywhere between 200 to 500 copies of the author's book to gift to the students so that they could start their home libraries.
So she set up a few author visits to schools.
All of these students come up and they're like, this is so cool. This is the first time I'm meeting an author. I can't wait to read your book.
Moments like that are life-changing for children.
If you can find the right book for someone, you can ensure that they become a reader for the rest of their lives. It's called transformative learning.
Early education is a critical time for developing these skills.
I think one of the things that I would beg people is to pay attention to those early years, because that's when habits are forming. If a child falls in love with a book very early on, he or she will become a reader. If they don't have access to books, that doesn't happen. And it will never catch again.
One way to address this is better funding for libraries.
The Bronx libraries are not any overburdened than any other place. Really, we don't have enough libraries. We simply don't. What's extraordinary to me is the New York City libraries, public libraries, are not well funded, certainly not well funded enough.
Gregory saw the impact of underfunding when filming 1.5 million.
In looking at a lot of the information on libraries through anecdotes and also talking to, you know, one of the borough directors at the time, senior directors, people, yes, are taking up books, they're using the resources. However, it is something where not as much money is funded or funneled into the systems in the Bronx as you would look at Queens and like Staten Island, because the people there are comfortable with the bare minimum. Okay, we have some books, but then what types of books? So you have an influx of picture books and older books and things of that nature. But as you would compare it to Manhattan, there are a lot of empty shelves. There are a lot of older resources. Now in the last 4 years, the library system has begun renovating many of their older branches. So Mott Haven and Van Cortlandt branch and things of that nature. So as you see that it's still a lot of investments are needed here in terms of not just the libraries themselves, but marketing, because a lot of people just view it as a place to do their rudimentary tasks and not really invest in the full nature and really take advantage of the systems that the libraries have to offer.
One problem is that the New York public library system serves so many people.
Many of the libraries in other parts of the country have very vast outreach services. So if you don't come to them, they come to you. And that's not true in New York. We don't have the resources to have our wonderful librarians come to the school and interact with children on a regular basis. Another problem in the Bronx, and I've done it personally, is that Bronx is big. And so it's often a trek to go to a library.
State laws require every school in New York to have a library.
In the legislation, there is a requirement that there's a certain amount of money that is supposed to be designated to libraries for children in elementary, middle, and high schools.
But many don't.
So we're missing school librarians, we're missing outreach, we're missing many resources that could help our children.
You may be wondering, how do they get away with this?
They often go to mobile devices and computers and iPads, and they say, well, children can get books off of those iPads or computers, you know, the digital library.
She says the problem with ebooks is that kids aren't enticed by them.
They don't use digital books very often. And as a result, they're not getting that kind of practice that it really takes to enjoy a physical book where you have to turn those pages.
Physical copies are inviting to young readers.
Every time a child is near a book, they're likely to pick it up. But if you have to trek and you have to go and walk a sizable amount of blocks in order to get a book, you're not going to do it as well. It's just a matter of proximity.
Community resources, like free little libraries, can provide books to kids, but it can be hard to get kids excited about a used book.
For poor kids, seeing a tattered book is not something that is going to draw their attention. They see tattered things all the time. What I want them to see is I want them to see bright, shiny, brand new books that are just for them. You might have heard about our vending machine experiment with JetBlue, but what we find is when the children see a book and it's wrapped in cellophane and they know it's for them, it catches.
Again, this goes back to the need for funding. Advocates say the city has to do more to help children read and fill these literacy gaps. But in the meantime, there are ways New Yorkers in all five boroughs can help.
You can start a little free library, or you can start your own book club. You don't have to, you know, create a bookstore or an online bookstore. You can, you know, give books to people. You can try and sign up friends and people within the libraries. And if you have relatives that are young, you know, nieces and nephews and grandchildren, you can say, hey, I want to build you a home library.
For Gregory, who was once set on moving across the country, it means working to uplift his home neighborhood.
There's a lack of investment in this borough that I'm a part of that I thought I would abandon. And now that I'm, I don't want to say I've ingratiated myself, but now that I feel like I'm a part of this community, I feel the need to continue to fight for the betterment of it, for its benefit.
And for Ceresia, it means continuing to promote reading through the festival.
I just want people to recognize we are here. There are people in the Bronx who are on literary missions to revolutionize the Bronx. There are people who've been working here for years and doing the work in the community. And so I really want that stigma of the people in the Bronx don't read to go away. And instead of calling it a literacy crisis, I want people to say there's a literary revolution, which is what I've been using, happening in the Bronx, because of course we know it's a crisis, but that kind of has this just like aura of it's not going to ever get better. Whereas if you say we're revolutionizing the way people engage with books and literacy in the Bronx, that sort of, you know, nods to a change. It nods to an opening of this is happening here, so let's flood the Bronx with books. And the other term that everyone also uses, it's a book desert. Yes, it is a book desert. We know that. But what can we do to change that?
Thanks so much for listening. In Depth is a special production of WCBS News Radio 880. If you are enjoying our series, please rate, review, and subscribe. We're on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. Special thanks to producer Dempsey Palat and audio engineer Andy Eganthorpe. Fami Redwood is the managing producer of podcasts, and I am your host, Jill Webb.